Welcome to the Do Zone, where entrepreneurs go to get things done. I'm your host, Josh Thomas. You can find me on all social media at JT Literally. Each week, I bring on experts from a variety of backgrounds to share their secrets on how to optimize performance so you can take massive action and crush your goals. Speaking of optimizing performance, we now have trained AI sales and support agents ready to help you close more deals, reduce expenses, and provide five-star customer service. To learn more, go to anabots.ai. That's anabots.ai. Today's guest is Jeffrey Sater. Jeffrey is the founder of Equine Biomechanics and Exercise Physiology, which helps HNWI and entrepreneurs looking to get into the horse racing business pick and manage young, unraced thoroughbred horses who may then become champions. Jeffrey has spent millions, including 7 million plus of his own money, researching and refining the science of picking a champion racehorse for 4+ decades and grown EQB to be one of the USA's leading talent scout buyers for young, unraced thoroughbred horses. Wow. Jeffrey, welcome to the Do Zone. Tell us something you believe is the key to getting stuff done that most people wouldn't think of.
Well, thank you for having me here. Well, most people wouldn't think of, I always think one of the keys to getting things done is looking like past what's right in front of you to the core of whatever it is. And part of that is you have to always ask, how do they know? So they tell you about the industry. They tell us, how do you know? And in the racehorse industry, when I started asking that, I realized it was mostly eyeball and intuition. 300 years of accumulated experience that wasn't silly, but it was a lot that they had no idea about. And even the veterinarians and the research literature on racehorses was like nil. So I decided I could make a contribution there. I identified that niche. I've done that before in other industries. I know that I came into a bankrupt chain of 40 department stores in California at one point, and I looked at what they were doing. And I started asking a lot of questions. How do you know? How do you know? And they did, a lot of it was just guessing based on studies that were lousy or something. And when I really got into it, the stores they thought that were terrible were actually in their best areas. And we just changed around strategies to hold the customers they already had, not to try to get the customers they were never going to get. And the thing took off.
That's the craziest thing, man. And for those of you who are listening right now, there is in fact an auctioneer in the background. So we're really embracing the spirit of the racehorse industry here.
You are at one of the major USA racehorse auctions right now. I'm sitting here and right there because I'm working it.
Yeah.
I turned the sound down as much as I could.
Hopefully you don't miss a good one while you're talking to us.
So I've got it timed, I think.
Okay.
I have a partner here working it with me.
All right, good deal. And so one of the things that stood out to me when you said, how do you know? And it's just like kind of based on an eyeball. I was thinking about the movie Moneyball, and I looked in the notes and you actually mentioned this. For those of you who are not familiar, there's a movie that came out about 10, 15 years ago called Moneyball, Brad Pitt. And it tells the true story of Billy Beane and how he kind of took the baseball philosophy of, it looks like a strong dude. He looks strong, and just said, well, hey, can he get on base? And let's just focus on one statistic that's going to win games, and it's your on base percentage. And so could you talk to us a little bit about that line of thinking and how it applies to racehorses?
Absolutely. In the racehorse business, the majority of the people, they look at the catalog page, which is the pedigree, and that's the most important thing to them. And the next most important thing is how fast the horse goes if they show the horse in a show. And they're both really poor predictors. And the top stallion, the very top stallions with $150,000, $500,000 stud fees per pop, 96, 97% of those offspring are not good horses and don't even come close to their purchase price. So if pedigree was it, how could 97% of them be failing with us? Mint pedigrees and paying huge prices, millions of dollars for them, unraced. And at the speed of the horses, we looked into that, and it's really they go 1/8 of a mile in these shows, and they're going to have to go 6 times that to eight, or 8 times that a mile in a race. So if they can go very, very fast for 1/8 of a mile, so what? You win the first half of the race if they can't carry the speed. So we studied the gaits of horses and the energetics of it. And we learned that it's not so important how fast they go, but how they go fast. And as a result, like there are horses here that went fast that pass our stuff, sold for $1.9 million, $800,000, $925,000. And the horses that didn't go fast, that went just a little bit slower, sold for $50,000, $60,000. And they are statistically identical in the probability of success. But they did the speed they did perfectly. It's how they go fast, not how fast they go. Because those horses, they're never going to have to go as fast as these workouts anyway for a race. And if they can carry the speed, then you're going to win the races. And to prove that we've done it, we have bought million-dollar earners for $10,000, $20,000. More than once, we have had two world champions. We've had Kentucky Derby winner and second twice. One, the top 20 horses of the crop every year is three-year-olds qualify for the Kentucky Derby. The crop was about 25,000 horses, so your chances are 20 out of 25,000. Most people never get there who've been a really good experts and or once in a lifetime. We've had horses in it almost every year. One year we had 20% of the gate, five horses in it, although a 50-to-1 shot won that year. And we've been doing this. We've been doing this at average or below auction prices, like 150,000 and down. And a lot of people say that's impossible, but we do it. And it's documented and they can see it, but they don't ask. And there's so much stuff out there. All these people say, oh yeah, I did something to do with that horse. You know, success has many fathers and failure is an orphan, but they don't have much to do with the horse or buying the horse. Or they had one horse and they're the expert that was right once, you know. We have to do it a few times every year or we wouldn't be in business.
Well, there's a strong lesson that I'm hearing, that I'm pulling out here, and it's not how fast they go, it's how they go fast. And, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast. And a lot of us, as we're first starting our business, we go out the gate and we just run as fast and hard as we can. And then guess what? We face plant really fast. And what you're saying
is, hey, as they can, and what somebody told them is what they're supposed to do, but they don't ask them why. Why?
Yeah. How do you know?
The opposite.
How do you know? Yeah.
Going back to your first thing. I mean, it took about 20 years and a lot of money to develop the data. I had to develop the equipment to get the data. That didn't exist. I invented an ultrasound machine that was portable to go look at their hearts in the stalls. I should have patented it. I have other patents, but you know, and then once the database got big enough, I started to find out a lot of things that were surprising. Definitely the opposite of some of what the veterinarians had told me. But they were true and they work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things that stands out to me. And this is a great kind of like confirmation. I referenced that movie Moneyball a lot. And so I was glad to see you talking about it, but it's just another confirmation that the thing that you think is not always the best. The thing that everybody else has always done is not necessarily the best thing. The thing that is the best thing is the thing that's proven to work over and over and over and over again. You got to have the data.
And if the database doesn't exist, then go create it. That's what I did on resources and boom.
And so talk to us a little bit about investing in racehorses, because I know a lot of us are familiar with investing in businesses, investing in real estate, stock market.
It's like people will buy a McLaren car for $1 million something and if they got in a racetrack, they'd slide off the first turn. They just want to own it. They don't care about the money. A lot of these guys just want the social life and the networking and to show off. So it's a totally irrational market. And that's why they're still spending hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on these young horses that I am sure are not going to make it to the races or are going to get hurt or aren't very talented. And so the prices are generally not really a predictor of performance. That's number one. So you don't want to just go and do what everybody's doing. You don't want to do what's fashionable. You will get screwed. 96% of that is a total loss. Over 90% of the stables lose all their money. The major stable I worked for was a new guy. He was from Egypt, and he wanted to get into racing. In his third year, he was the leading stable in the United States, and he won, he won major world championships, Kentucky Derby. And he did it spending under the average of the auctions and spending far less than like the Arabs spent in some of the major stables. So what's the lesson there? The lesson there is the market's irrational. You cannot assume that you're going to get value for your dollar. In fact, you probably won't. The more you spend doesn't make it a better horse. And the more horses you have, the better your chance. If you buy one or two horses, you know, nobody's batting 500. I mean, it would be like putting the guy up against the best pitcher in the world, and he only gets one time at bat. You know, you don't know. But if he's up there 10 or 15 times, you know pretty much what he's going to do. Well, you have to have more than one horse. So this guy, he put in $40 million, and at the end of 7 years, he had $64 million. And then he had American Pharoah, which was the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. There's an article about us the day before that horse won the Triple Crown. June 5th, 2015, front page center, New York Times. And the quote of the day, they always have on the front page a quote of the day. The quote of the day was us, and it was, sell your house, don't sell this horse. The Egyptian pound had tanked and devalued 50%. There were all kinds of other problems. And the guy was a heavy gambler, and he put the horse in an auction. And it, part of our job in helping him was to give him our opinion. And we said, this is a super horse. Sell your house, don't sell this horse. And he didn't sell it. And he got offered $300,000. He didn't take it, thank God, because he ended up being worth $50 million. And wow. Sending him, you know, the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. And why? Well, because the thickness of the septal muscle in his heart, and the size and the function of the chamber and the diaphragm and the lungs and the length of the stride and the efficiency of the gait and everything, go on and on and on. It was all off the charts. And so we said, please, please, we want to see what happens.
Yeah. Wow.
I can tell a story like that about our first customer, big customer, a guy who went on. He's won two or three national championships and world championships. And when he hired us, he had 200 horses. And he said, come look at my horses and make one recommendation, and I'll see how you do. So I went and looked over his horses. And he had a new stallion named, what was the name of the stallion? Catty Antis. And he had a horse that was a maiden, meaning it had never won a race, named Nolan's Cat after his son, Nolan. And I said, put Nolan's Cat in the Belmont Stakes. And he burst out laughing. Belmont Stakes is a classic race. It's one everybody in their lifetime wants to win. It's $2 million purse. It's one of the most important races in the world. And it's the third leg of this Triple Crown. So he puts Nolan's, and I explained to him why. So I said, he's not fast. That's why he's losing. You're putting him in at 3/4 mile, and he's not fast, but he never slows down. And the extrapolated time for him at 1.5 miles in the Belmont Stakes is going to be competitive. And then you're going to have a horse that's placed in one of the biggest races in the world for your brand new stallion, instead of a maiden that everybody thinks is a donkey. So he did it. And with that day of the race, the trainer was there, and he was unhappy, and he made no secret of it. And he said he was being forced to do this when he got interviewed. And the Daily Racing Forum talked about who were all the entrants and who did this, who was likely and why and blah, blah. And then they said, then there's all the jokers who don't know any better pretty much than to do this, which included us. And I never got an apology, of course. So, then when they left the gate, he was trailing the field, and I wanted to hide under the table. And then, you know, about halfway through the race, he started to pick up horses. And then about 3/4 of the way, he's charging, he's passing everybody. And by the end of the race, if they'd have gone another eighth, he'd have won the damn thing. And he ended up third, but, you know, going much faster than the winner at that point, which was exactly what I told him could happen. So now he had a horse placed in the classic race. And to show it wasn't a fluke, he later went in a Louisiana Super Derby, which I think was a $1 million race at the time, which was 20 years ago, probably 15 years ago. And he was second or third there too. So now he was an established, you know, serious runner. So he'd made the pedigree of his dad, who was the guy's new stallion. And so he hired us, and we went on to do a lot of good work for him. We got him horses, more than one, to the Kentucky Derby with low odds, among other things.
That's awesome, man. That's great. And so where can people learn more about what you do and get involved?
Well, we have a website. It ends in .fyi, don't try .com. It's just EQB, like Echo Queen Bravo for equine biometrics. And it lays out a lot of stuff. And it also, you can download from there literally data and stuff we published in Referee, the United States major veterinary referee scientific journals, with lots of data. And, you know, to get into that, and I'm not a veterinarian, they really were looking hard at me because they thought I was full of baloney. But I was working with leading luminaries in Harvard and veterinary school, the University of Pennsylvania, and the head of the biomechanics and the United States Olympic Committee. I wasn't by myself. So, You know, it was good. It's, you can, we literally gave that away. Not that most people don't even know it exists, but it's there and you can download it. Or you can just go to the track record thing and it lists all these horses we bought, how much we paid, where we bought them, and you can look it up and see that it's true.
That's awesome.
And it also gives some stuff in detail about some of the methodologies that we use, like tries to explain multivariate discriminant analysis, but a lot of people don't give a damn. They just want to win.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. Well, hey, we're going to wrap up from here. Thanks so much to our guest, Jeffrey Sater, for joining us and sharing some wisdom about how he gets things done and how he gets horses to go fast. Not that they run fast, but how they get fast. And so you can connect with him and learn more about his research by going to eqb.fyi. And
we have a lot of fun with horses too. I mean, I really enjoy racing, and I can tell you that if you put $2 on a horse, the race will be infinitely more interesting too.
Indeed. Reminds me of college. I actually graduated from UK in Kentucky. So
there you go. Then you know all about it.
Yeah. Actually, funny story. I remember, here's the most Kentucky thing that somebody can do. We had an extended lunch break at school one day, and couple of friends, we piled into his Jeep and rolled up to the front curb of Keeneland, which is a racetrack in Lexington. We just hit the curb, you know, grabbed a couple of beers, bet on some horses, lost some money, and we were back before the 2 o'clock class. And so it's
yeah, well, it's fun. Well, while they were running, I mean, I bet you were interested.
Do what?
It can be a lot of fun. I love the horses. I live on a horse farm. I love the baby horses in the spring. The whole thing is, that's why I do it, really. That's why I got into it.
Awesome. Well, hey, for those of you who are looking to connect with Jeffrey, you can go to eqb.fyi. And if you're on your morning commute in the gym or somewhere out in the field, snap a selfie, tag me at JT Literally. Show me what you do in the do zone. One more time, if you're looking to boost your sales, cut your costs, and increase customer satisfaction, get yourself an Anabot by going to anabots.ai. Hey, that's it. That's it for this episode. Let's get to work. Hey, thanks for listening to the Do Zone podcast. If you're running a service-based business that's looking to grow this year, let's talk about how we can slingshot you into momentum with a quick injection of cash and sales. Our clients typically see results in as little as 7 days. To learn more about what we do, you could go to factor1.io. Once again, that's factor1.io. We'll see you next time.